Adam Lapp.
The best part of waking up, it's the doo-wop, doo-wop in all I do. The mountain goat aroma always coming through.
Always coming through.
Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. Now I'm right in harmony with that doo-wop, doo-wop ditty. Whoa, one more cup and it's a hoo-wop, shoo-wop for me. Oh, the best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup. The best part of waking up is Folgers in your cup.
And a very hearty good morning out there in, as I say, Radio Land. It's time for mid-morning coffee break with Adam. And that would be I, Adam Lepp, Adam the Computer Guy, Adam at WWGH1071.com. Man of many monikers. Feels a lot more like July than it does in late September. My goodness, I got out of my car, out of the parking lot. It is steamy out there. Don't want to scare anybody off by taking off my clothing, but I am wearing a summer outfit. See, that's part of the fun of being in radio. You never quite know what the announcer looks like, what he or she is wearing, or what people are doing behind the scenes in the studio. Be having our regular commentator for his 18th appearance on the show. Pretty cool. As we say, he's now of legal voting age, appropriately so. Dr. Ronald Fineman, live from his beautiful home in southeastern Florida, the Sunshine State, but it's kind of sunny and humid here in Ohio. Feels a lot more like Florida than it does mid-Ohio, but I'll take it. No complaints. It certainly beats the snow. Actually, it's kind of nice outside, kind of refreshing. But before we connect with Dr. Fineman, I'd like to ask you to stand, or if you don't want to stand, that's okay. You don't have to. It's an open invitation to stand, to knee, to go get some coffee, whatever you wish to do, playing a very cool version of our national anthem. Segment, to knee or not to knee? That is the question, because that seems to be the most important issue facing the United States right now. We're going to talk about that shortly. I couldn't get William Shakespeare, author of that famous line from the wonderful play Hamlet, on. He was not available, but I got the next best thing from southeastern Florida. Very intelligent, learned, erudite individual, Dr. Ronald Fineman, to co-host this segment with me. Ron, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fine, Adam. Thank you very much for inviting me. The 12th time for you and the 18th time for this station. I really appreciate it.
Did you like that rock and roll version of our national anthem?
It was different. It was certainly very interesting, yes. There are many different versions, and I think it was a very good one.
Before we get to today's topics, I had a question for you. I know this is kind of silly, and I was thinking about this yesterday. I didn't want to Google it because I really think we should ask an expert instead of Googling anything and everything. In the national anthem, Ron, I assume you're familiar with it. What are ramparts? What exactly does that word mean?
Ramparts.
It's not part of a male goat, right? That's not ramparts. It means something else, right?
I think it has to do with the defense of at the time of the battle in the War of 1812 in Maryland, I believe. You know, you caught me off guard here, but I think that refers to that, to the whole issue at the time of the War of 1812, which is what the national anthem came out of, by Francis Scott Key.
as a aficionado of singing, as I tell people, I have more of a talking voice than a singing voice. The national anthem, interestingly, is considered one of the hardest songs to sing because it requires a lot of range. And again, the words are kind of complicated. Just kind of an interesting sidelight if you're a, kind of an amateur singer as I am. It's one of the hardest songs to belt out, and I think that's part of the charm of the song. Is when you go to the baseball game, if you do want to sing along, it's fun, but your voice kind of gets drowned out by everybody else who's singing it. And thankfully, because it is kind of a hard song, but it's good to practice
many
also.
Many times, yes, at games. Yeah.
Let's speak about a couple things, Ron. We are going to cover the NFL issue and the president and players standing, kneeing, what have you. But let's first talk about baseball. It's not been a very, it's been an absolutely disastrous year for my beloved Cincinnati Reds. It's been a better year for the Cleveland Indians, but we have this rookie, Mr. Judge, and judged by his stats, he might be winning some accolades this year.
Yes, he just hit his 49th and 50th home run for the New York Yankees as a rookie, and he broke the record of Mark McGwire of the Oakland Athletics, who I think in 1986, I believe it was, had 49 homers, and of course went on to a great career. So Aaron Judge is definitely someone to really admire and to applaud.
And thankfully doing it without taking any steroids, which...
Well, we hope so. I'm assuming that, because that really destroys baseball when people are doing that. But as far as we know, that is the case. He's only 25, and it just looks like he's a magnificent player, and I commend his great performance this year for the Yankees.
So with somewhat less than glamorous moments in sports this year, especially for, again, my beloved team, though. Certainly up north, Cleveland Cavaliers. And the Indians doing quite well. The Columbus Blue Jackets made it to the playoffs for the first time last year.
Yeah, the Indians had 22 straight wins and broke the American League record for most wins in a row. That's amazing.
Let's hope that the lure of performance enhancement doesn't affect Mr. Judge and that he plays at his natural best. And as you know, I'm very against the use of steroids. I don't think anybody who's ever used them, who's touched a steroid, should ever be in the Hall of Fame, let alone on the ball field. So let's hope that those dark days of steroid usage are over and we've really found a talent. And I think maybe that's the case. One unique thing about today's show is we're going to take phone calls. I've rigged up a little system. As the computer guy, I have a couple tricks up my sleeve. If you'd like to talk with me and Dr. Feynman, we can talk in baseball, football, we can talk about Korea, of course, about Mr. Trump. And or if you have a question, he's someone who's been around U.S. history. In fact, he's had a PhD in the topic for 45 years. He's still teaching. He's certainly one of the premier scholars of presidential history, especially in the last 100 years in this country. And so if you'd like to speak to Dr. Feynman or, again, debate a topic, we are taking your calls, so feel free to ring me up. I believe I've gotten this system perfected. The number is 937-687-8324. That also comes to yes, 687-TECH. So 937-687-8324, or leave a message on our Facebook page. We would love to hear from you. Ron, I think one of the top stories floating around, again, is the national anthem and the football players, Colin Kaepernick and other players who decided that possibly standing for the national anthem is not something that they want to do. Do you have a kind of a quick take on it? Is the story been kind of blown out of proportion, or is there really a valid point that the players and the teams are making on this issue?
I think it's an important issue, because of the fact of the reality of racial discrimination and abuse of African Americans historically and even in the present, sometimes by police officers. We've had a number of incidents that have been very troubling, more than a number in the last few years. The point is that this is freedom of speech. And, the fact that we have freedom of speech doesn't mean everybody has to be happy with what we do, but we have freedom of speech, and the president seems to be saying we don't, and that is not acceptable. And the thing is, instead of his spending his time on this and on the NFL and also on the NBA and all that. He needs to spend time on Puerto Rico, which of course is being ignored pretty much by him, and also also cut down on his rhetoric, which could lead us into a war that we could avoid with North Korea. And it's very troubling that he's spending time on matters that really should not be in the forefront.
You are listening to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, and that's me, Adam Lepp. Adam the Computer Guy, email me at adam@wwgh1071.com. On the line with regular commentator, good friend of mine and of the station, on for the 18th time. How about that? Dr. Ronald Feynman, 937-687-8324. That comes to yes, 687-TECH, if you'd like to speak with us, debate topics, ask him a question. Open phone lines. We would love to hear from you. Don't be shy. We don't bite, at least not too hard. Ron, according to CNN, President Trump sounded very satisfied with his recent remarks on patriotism and the NFL in a dinner with conservative group leaders at the White House last night, according to the person who attended the event. Donald Trump said, "It's really caught on. It's really caught on. I said what millions of Americans were thinking. You could really tell he was satisfied," said the person at this event. He was referring over the weekend in which President Trump harshly criticized players who kneel during the national anthem. Many players who have done so have said they are protesting police brutality. And as we discussed, Ron, there is importance to this issue, but I think there are bigger fish to fry, starting with Puerto Rico. And I agree, we need
Absolutely.
To get that solved. Do you have any, if we were to have Donald Trump on the phone for a couple minutes here, would you have any suggestions to him about what to prioritize and maybe how to help rebuild Puerto Rico?
Well, I do think that President Trump needs to address the issue. Hillary Clinton has brought it up now, and others have. And I think we have to address the issue by putting massive funding and sending Navy ships in and helicopters in. And we have to realize we're going to have a mass temporary removal of a large number of people there to the mainland of the United States. Hopefully many of them will wish to go back. But I also think it is likely that a lot of them may leave and never come back, because it's going to be years before Puerto Rico, even with massive aid, can be rebuilt. It's an island that's in isolation, and it's really a terrifying situation to be faced without any electric or any water supplies now or food. And in fact, where I teach, my department chair, her parents live in Puerto Rico. They're in their 80s, and she's very, very concerned and worried about it. And this is just a human crisis about American citizens. These are not foreigners. I know there are people who tend to think people from Puerto Rico are immigrants. They are not immigrants. They are U.S. citizens. And this is just not proper, the fact that a week has gone by and so little has been done. And I think Mr. Trump needs to deal with that and stop focusing on things that more promote demagoguery and try to win points with his base. The base is not the whole country, and he has to go beyond that.
Among the major issues currently would be the Graham-Cassidy bill, replacement for Obamacare. Any thoughts this Tuesday morning, Ron, about the status of that, and what do you think will happen 6 months down the road? Will we still have the current system, or will there be something new? Or, as you and I are thinking,
I
may have someone else in the White House.
The current system, but hopefully a bipartisan bill to improve it. That's what needs to be done, because by the end of this month, only a few days from now, the ability to abolish Obamacare with just 50 or 51 votes will end. It will need 60 votes, and that means there's going to have to be bipartisanship, which it should have been from day one of the Trump administration, but has not been. And I think last night on CNN, Cassidy and Graham were on and debating Amy Klobuchar of Minnesota and Bernie Sanders, and I don't think they looked very good. And it's clear that Susan Collins and John McCain and likely Lisa Murkowski and apparently Rand Paul, who just wants to get rid of the whole situation altogether of any involvement in health care, so that's the opposite. They are the ones that are preventing it, but I think the real heroes are Susan Collins and John McCain, and I think the condemnation by Trump of McCain, who is so sick, is so ill, and has been such a war hero, is absolutely despicable.
We are speaking live on the phone with Dr. Ronald Feynman, scholar of U.S. presidents and history, also teaches part-time at a local area of local institution of higher learning. That's what I wanted to say. Adam Lepp here. Good morning. Tuesday, late September, but it feels more like mid-July. Quite steamy outside. 29 minutes after 10. We are taking your telephone calls. Question about U.S. history or politics? Like to debate with us? You agree? Don't agree? Baseball is fine. Pick a topic. As long as it's related to current events, it is cool with me. The number is 937-687-8324. Be sure to like us on Facebook if you're not already a friend, fan, and follower of ours. That's kind of hard to say, but it's also kind of fun. Look up WWGH107.1. Of course, you can also listen to our station with the free TuneIn app on your mobile device. Just, again, download the TuneIn app. It's free on your iPhone. Doesn't have to be one of those $999 iPhones. Can be an older one. Of course, an Android phone, if you're like me, an Android person. Download the app, install it, and then look for WWGH 107.1. Click on the little triangle thingy, which is also called a play button, and you can listen anywhere in the world on demand, live. It's definitely cool with a capital C. Anyway, Ron, you write the popular blog, theprogressiveprofessor.com. Some of your posts in the last week or so have been quite interesting, quite stimulating to the brain cells. A recurring theme is, and again, you and I certainly agree wholeheartedly, that Donald Trump will not be president until the expiration date of his current term, which I believe is 11:59:59 a.m. Eastern Standard Time, January 20th, 2021, if I'm not mistaken. We think he's going to be impeached or to resign or in some other way removed from his Oval Office sometime before then. Another issue with Trump is he certainly is not a traditional Republican. Mike Pence, certainly more traditional. He's certainly conservative, especially in social issues. More moderate Republicans are Governor John Kasich, another John McCain, of course. A little more moderate, a little more traditional, and I would say a lot more experienced and probably more qualified, but that's another item that's open for discussion and debate.
Don't debate about Kasich. He's been on CNN. He's been on MSNBC in the last day. He comes across better all the time. He really does, Governor Kasich.
And he lives almost within listening area of the station. So, Mr. Kasich, if you are listening, good morning, and thank you for your excellent governing, and feel free to call the show. We would love to hear from you.
Oh, I'd love to talk to Governor Kasich. I know. Are you there, John?
I know. Scott Spears, the interviewer to the stars, he has had almost anybody who's anybody on the show, but he's never had Mr. Kasich on, so maybe we can do a first. He's had Sherrod Brown on several times. So even Adam can get his share of celebrity and interesting people on his show. Anyway, Ron, one thing about Trump, I mean, love him or hate him, there's no question, he's not a traditional Republican. And as I recall, he was actually a Democrat early in his career, then he became a Republican. He's kind of wavered, and that isn't really bad. He just isn't independent. He kind of marches to the beat of a different drummer. But the problem when you're the president, you do have to, at least in this country as I see it, in modern times, align yourself with either party. That way you're getting the support, the financial backing, and of course Congress to agree with you, or at least be willing to have intellectual discussion. But we're seeing Donald Trump as an independent, but more importantly, he's alienating the Republicans, the longtime Republicans like John McCain, like John Kasich, even possibly his VP Mike Pence. And we're seeing that possibly as something that will have a detrimental effect on the Republican Party. I know you wrote about that in your blog on Sunday. Any more thoughts you want to share with our listeners about that and how he is dividing the Republican Party?
Well, I think that Trump is really harming the Republican brand for the long run, and I think in his own mind, I have a feeling, and I've read or heard about it elsewhere, that he might Even if he is forced out of office, if he was, that he could come back and run as an independent in 2020. Legally, he could, and that he could be a third choice along with the Republicans and Democrats. And we could have a three-party race where if he could win the right combination of electoral votes and win maybe 40% of the vote, he could be elected after being pushed out. That's what's really weird, that it would not prevent him from running the next time as a true revolutionary against both major parties. And that is quite a terrifying thought.
So you're saying that he could resign, or could he actually be impeached and then run again as an independent? Is that possible? Is that legal? What are the scenarios where he could be out and then back in again? I mean,
well,
most
if
like-
he was to face impeachment, assuming he would quit before the House of Representatives voted, if he did like Richard Nixon after the Judiciary Committee voted to impeach him, he resigned, then he actually would not have been impeached by the House because it would not have gone through, and he would not have been put on trial unless he stays for it before the U.S. Senate. So he could claim that he was railroaded out of office, he was forced out of office, and come back and say that I'm coming back as an independent to challenge the whole party system. And in theory, if he could get his 33% base and a certain percentage more to have sympathy for him, I suppose he could be a real threat in 2020 after being out of office and coming back.
So
he would be eligible for one more term because he can be elected twice under the 22nd Amendment. So that is a pretty terrifying thought.
So the scenarios are kind of interesting. We had President Cleveland. Again, that's why we have either 44 or 45 presidents, depending upon how you count it. And he was pretty traditional. He almost like these hit songs where they make way for another hit song to be number one. They're pushed into number two or number three. Then they go back into number one for a few more weeks. I believe Betty Davis Eyes by Kim Carnes was like that. It was number one for 5 weeks, then it was number two. Then it was number one for four more weeks. So we could have a president like Grover Cleveland, where he's president, and then he's not president for 4 years, and then he comes back, and that would be more traditional. But Ron,
now, I want to point out about Grover Cleveland. Actually, he won the popular vote three times, but the second time, he lost the Electoral College. That's the third time out of five that the popular vote winner lost the election, but he actually won the popular vote three times, and nobody else has done that, and only Franklin D. Roosevelt won it four times. So he is unique in that sense, only president twice, but actually winning the popular vote in the second time that he lost the Electoral College and lost to Benjamin Harrison as a result. So it's a very unique circumstance for Grover Cleveland.
Ron, you are certainly a wealth of knowledge on that stuff. The whole idea that the Electoral College might be antiquated, might be discriminatory, just may not be a cool thing to have, will be a topic of discussion. And, of course, this president, if he were to be elected by popular vote, he wouldn't be president. We'd have the first female president and the first, I guess you'd call Bill the first gentleman. Of course, he used to be a president, so it would be kind of interesting. But again, the many scenarios. But bottom line is, all kidding aside, if Donald Trump were to resign, even if he were to face impeachment, then he could run again. He could even run again as a Republican, but we think probably it would be as an independent. If you're impeached, you are, I guess, blacklisted. You can never be president again. Is that correct if you're successfully impeached?
Well, I don't know, because if he resigns I don't think he would wait to be impeached by the House. I think he would resign like when Richard Nixon did. But if he was impeached and then said, I'm not going to go to trial, I resign, it would mean he had not been convicted and removed. He just resigned. So I think legally he could run again and claim he's a victim, and he loves to be a victim, as we all know.
So that could happen. Another thing, too,
I was thinking
is if he were to resign, Mike Pence were to be president, then Mike Pence possibly could pardon him, and then Donald Trump could come back. There are so many interesting scenarios here. You talk about a tangled web that we weave. So many different things. We could spend, I think, a couple of shows discussing just the what-if scenarios.
You know, I must say that if Mike Pence became president and did not pardon him, then he could run against him. It could be, assuming he got the nomination, Pence, but he might not. It might be Kasich or someone else, but it could be Pence versus Trump versus whoever the Democrats run. And again, all you need is to win the right combination of electoral votes. He doesn't have to win even 46% of the vote. He could win 40%, 39%, and he could become president again, believe it or not, without a party behind him.
So the scenarios really are quite brain tingling, to say the least. Now, the other idea which we've brought up, Ron, is if Trump is removed, I guess it's the 25th Amendment, where Pence decides he is not fit for office. And then
Section 4, yes,
if that
25th
were,
Amendment.
If that were to occur, then is he blacklisted, or could he come back if that's used?
I think legally he probably could come back. But I would also say that I don't know how it could be mandated that he should have to have a mental evaluation, because I think there's definite evidence of him being bipolar, at least, and possibly having early dementia, which his father had for many years. So I think there's definitely something mentally unstable about him. And with the situation with North Korea now, and him stirring up trouble with Iran on a deal that, while we may not love it, is being obeyed, and the other five nations, you know, Britain, France, Germany, Russia, and China are all still backing it, and also threatening Venezuela. I mean, we could have three wars or military interventions on top of ISIL and on top of the Afghanistan war. So I think he's in a very, I think we're in a very dangerous time now. And I think the military people around him know it. And Kelly has had his face down many times when Trump opens up and goes loose with his rhetoric. And I just think it must be hell to work for him now. And they're trying to control him so that we don't go off into a nuclear war with North Korea.
So he is, we're saying, bipolar, but not bipartisan.
No, he's not white. Although he's worked with the Democrats right now and upset the Republicans, but then he goes and insults Chuck Schumer right after that. So the man is extremely unstable, and this is simply not the way the leader of the free world should be, and it worries the German Chancellor Merkel, who thankfully won a big victory, although there is a right-wing party there now that has seats in the parliament. That's dangerous. But it certainly is upsetting the leaders of all these countries, including South Korea, where there's still, you know, anger about the idea of changing the trade deal in the midst of a conflict where we could have millions of people slaughtered in Seoul, 35 miles from the North Korean boundary, if there's a war.
You are tuned to Mid-Morning Coffee Break with Adam, and Adam is yours truly, Adam Lepp, Adam at WWGH1071.com, discussing the issues of the day with a good friend of mine in the station, Dr. Ronald Fineman, a professor of history and political science, author of two books, an all-around cool dude. We are taking your telephone calls. Feel free to call, debate a topic, ask Dr. Fineman a question, or provide your own perspective. I've rigged up a system here. The number is YES-687-TECH, which comes to 937-687-8324. Ron, we're believing that Mr. Trump will be out of office, let's say, within 6 to 9 months of today. So let's say that that happens. What do you think the chance is that in the 2020 election he will run as an independent?
Well, there's a recent thought that he could, but I would think there is a less than 50% chance of that happening. But I think it's something that he would love to do, to come back and challenge. And if he did win, then I think we'd really have a problem with the whole Bill of Rights and Constitution, because that would make him have an even more bold manner about him in public affairs and in domestic and foreign affairs. And I think that it would be extremely dangerous. But unless he is convicted of, you know, of something criminal where he has to go to prison, I do not think he could be prevented from running again as an independent. I don't think he would get the Republican nomination if he was forced out, but he could be an independent. So it is a worrisome situation.
Last but not least, this also kind of crossed the paths of my brain cells. Let's say he were impeached, and we don't think he would be impeached. We think he would be out first by resigning. But let's say he actually is impeached, because he certainly is a man who's, let's say, he's rather arrogant and isn't one to go out without a battle. So if that were to happen, could he ever run for elected office again? Like, could he run for governor of New York or mayor of New York City or senator or city councilman? When you're impeached as a president, are you permanently blacklisted from all elected office?
Well, we have Andrew Johnson, who was impeached, found not guilty, but he was impeached and went to trial in the U.S. Senate, and won the one by one a vote short of two thirds is needed to convict and remove. So he was not removed, but he almost was. But he then became U.S. Senator from Tennessee in 1875. Of course, the legislature of Tennessee selected him. There was not yet popular vote for the Senate. The 17th Amendment came in 1913, but Johnson was in public office after not being removed, but after facing impeachment and being found not guilty. If you're found guilty and removed, like if he actually went through the whole trial, well, nobody ever has because Nixon didn't, and the others, Bill Clinton and Andrew Johnson, were found not guilty. I would think if he stayed all the way and was removed by a two-thirds vote, he would not be able to, but otherwise, I think he'd be able to run, yes.
So the scenarios that could occur certainly are very intriguing. And again, love him or hate him, just what is occurring during this administration is unique with a capital U. And it's been an interesting time, certainly, as a member of the media, the press, fake or otherwise. And in your case, Ron, to be a part-time history and political science professor, you certainly are never at a loss of things to talk about.
No, life is interesting.
On your blog from yesterday, you were mentioning possible military force being used in North Korea, Iran, and Venezuela. Which do you think is the most possible, as well as which one would be the most dangerous?
Well, I think clearly North Korea would be, because now the North Korean foreign minister said that Trump, by his rhetoric, had declared war on North Korea, and they're ready to attack any U.S. plane, even outside their territorial airspace. So I think it's an extremely delicate situation, and I think Sarah Huckabee Sanders tried to, tried to pull back from that in her comments yesterday. But again, Trump needs to, I hate to say it, shut up and stop talking about this. But, he has his moments where he just goes off the wall, as we would say. But I think that's the most dangerous. Now, as far as Iran, again, Iran is not someone I'd say we have to trust, but I believe, as far as we know, the agreement with Iran done by President Obama is working. When it does not work, then we can face the problem and deal with it. But to ratchet up a problem with Iran at the same time as we have troubles with North Korea, and then threatening Venezuela with some kind of action, and already forbidding their nationals coming in now, I just think, it's very, very dangerous and reckless. And it's not just I would say that. Many conservative intellectual people say that, and many members of the Republican Party would say, tone down. His rhetoric, his Twitter feed is really becoming destructive.
We are speaking with Dr. Ronald Fineman, live from his, my favorite word, domicile in southeastern Florida, discussing the events of the day, taking your telephone calls, questions, comments, complaints, topics of debate. We would love to hear from you. I've rigged up a system where I can take calls with Dr. Fineman on the phone, 937-687-8324. Like to let you know that coming up after my show and the 11 a.m. features, well, that would be 10 a.m. Central Time, the 11 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time features. It is the lovely Linda Sims with her special guest. Don't want to miss that show. Always a woman of great perspective and insight, and a bit of a walking encyclopedia of the Mid-Ohio area. And then following Linda and the noon features, I'm back. Yes, he's back. As the guest host of Now Without Scott Spears, we take your telephone calls, discuss events of the day, offbeat news stories, or anything else that you'd like to address with me. Again, always taking your telephone calls. Normally, we take your calls at 740-383-WWGH. But for this show, we're taking your calls at 937-687-8324, which comes to YES 687-TECH. Always fun to spell letters and numbers on your telephone. Ron, I'm sure you remember going to your grandma's house and using the rotary dial phone. And again, since you're from New York City, and my grandma lived on 97th and Central Park West in Manhattan, they would have phone numbers where you would have like a word And then you'd have five more numbers. And so people actually did use the letters on their phone, which of course in those days was not a smartphone or even a touch tone. It was a rotary dial phone that you got from Ma Bell, from probably AT&T. You'd have a word, take the first two letters, and then have five numbers after that. They didn't even have area codes until, I believe, the 50s or the early 60s.
I think it was 1963, I remember. Because all along, I always knew that the number was two letters and then five numbers, yeah. And I think it was 1963 it started.
Yeah, just interesting. That was only 54 years ago. And then when they had
area codes came in around the same time.
And then when they had the area codes, there were much less area codes than there are now. 212 was all of New York City. And now New York City has probably half a dozen different area codes. California has so many that I've lost track. Even in Florida.
Quite a few, even in this area. There, I think of three in this area. And actually, when you think about it, the population of the United States in 1967 hit 100 million. All right, it is now 325 million. 200 million. It was 100 million in the, I think about 1920 or 1910. It was 200 million in 1967, and now it's 325 million 50 years later. So we're rapidly growing, and that makes a much more complex society, and the issues to deal with are much greater with such a growing population. A lot of it due to immigration as well as natural growth.
Yeah, right. The
population has increased about 75% fold, but we've added twice, three times, maybe four times as many area codes, and the reason is multiple. We don't have party lines like we used to, where you used to share your phone number with one or two neighbors. Everybody's got a cell phone. We have fax machines. But interestingly enough, Ron, I'm not sure we've discussed this before, but it's kind of intriguing. People had dial-up modems 20, 25 years ago when they used the internet, and that caused a lot of phone numbers to be exhausted, and they added a lot of area codes. And then people stopped using dial-up modems. It all went to broadband. And so they almost overestimated the need to have all these additional area codes and all these new phone numbers. But now everybody's got a cell phone. People have the throwaway or the prepaid cell phones, and fax machines aren't quite as popular as they used to be, but they're still being used. So it's almost an accordion effect with these phone numbers. And I think where you live, your area code would have been the Miami area code.
When I moved in 1989 to Florida, it already was different area codes. But back in the 60s, yeah, it was basically one area code. But now we have close to 6.5 to 7 million in the South Florida counties, Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade, and Monroe. So it's really magnified the number of people here.
Right. So 30, 40 years ago, the area code would have been 305, which covered pretty much all of southeastern Florida. Now it's one of those new area codes, one of about probably 10 in your neck of the woods. So kind of interesting how those things tend to change as we evolve, and we change the way that we communicate.
In politics. Nobody communicates in politics anymore.
Yeah, well, our current president, he governs by tweet, as we discussed, and it almost seems like the things that he feels most strongly about.
I must tell you, if he had run in 2000 when he was considering running for president as an independent, and let's just say somehow he had taken off, he would not have been able to use Twitter. Twitter didn't exist back then. We might have been better off if he had been president years ago, much like I say if Richard Nixon had been president in 1961, not 1969, he might have been a better president than he was, you know, with the events that affected his life and changed his outlook on people over the next 8 years. I think sometimes people are elected at the wrong time.
Now, Donald Trump, he is the oldest elected president, the first president to be elected in his 70s, correct?
As far as the time he took the oath, yes.
Right,
Ronald
Reagan was about
2.5 weeks short of the 70th birthday when he took the oath, you're correct.
Right, for the first time. Reagan was, of course reelected.
Yeah.
So, as we've talked about it, ironically, he does seem younger. Of course, maybe it's because of his younger and very attractive wife, but we can address that at a later time. Anyway, he does seem a bit younger. Again, he's not the most, he's not the most fit physical specimen, but he does seem to get a lot of exercise swinging the old golf club and typing.
And also moving his hands, as he says.
Yeah, and using typing.
When he speaks. He said that, actually.
Right.
And he also picked up some boxes in, I guess it was Texas, and he said, this is my exercise. putting them into a car or a truck or whatever.
Almost think of those T-shirts, Ron, where they say, I lift weights 12 ounces at a time, referring to just drinking beer instead of using barbells. So whatever his phone weighs, I guess he lifts weights 3 or 4 ounces at a time with this phone.
Yes. I must say, by the way, about Melania, is Melania has made speeches, including at the UN, about bullying, and I'm thinking, start at home. His bullying he has been doing is not a good example. She's right in what she says, but he should not be being, he should not be bullying as he has been doing on a regular basis for the last 2+ years.
It would appear that she does witness a lot of the bullying. Maybe that's why she's such an expert in that unfortunate.
I don't envy her living with him. I'm sure he's a monster to live with.
Yeah.
He's just either that or he's very different at home. Who knows? But he certainly in public is always on a performance, it seems. Like he just can't control himself.
Well, he is a reality show host, and that's, I guess, what you get. As we've talked about, though, all kidding aside, both Melania and their young son, Baron, they don't really seem too comfortable in their roles. And that's unfortunate. I mean, Baron is an innocent kid. He's 11 years old, and I think he deserves to live a regular childhood. And when you're the first family, the president, sure, you get everything you do. You are watched, and you are critiqued, even silly things. And we've talked about attire, people talking about Melania and those high-heel shoes that she wore when she was looking at the flooding in Texas. And, yes, they did look very nice, and she's already 6 feet tall, so she looked really tall at that point. But yes, I agree, they probably weren't the most appropriate footwear. But I think we have more pressing issues than what Melania is wearing in terms of footwear. And Amy Carter was defending, if I'm not mistaken, Baron Trump, who likes to wear just regular T-shirts when he's out and about. Mm-hmm. And pretty much just let the guy be a kid. It's difficult enough being the first son. And you don't have to be critiqued for everything you do, everything that you wear. The president, different. If you're president, everything, every single thing you do will be judged, good or bad. But the first family...
No question. Chelsea Clinton and the Bush daughters have always spoken up, as they did for, for Barack Obama's 2 daughters, and also for Barron. And the thing you have to remember is Donald Trump himself has actually admitted in the past that he was not very into his children, his older children. They were never around him that much. And I don't think Barron's around him maybe more because they live in the White House, but he's too busy with his own ego to really, I think, be a good father in that kind of a way. It's a sad situation.
Right. It was Chelsea Clinton, not Amy Carter, but close. Sometimes I confuse the two. I'm not quite sure why. But again, I admire both. I always admired Amy Carter because she had a difficult role. And I know we were watching on TV where she went to the D.C. public schools. And my mom didn't know if it was a publicity stunt or if President Carter just wanted her to be a regular kid.
I think it was the latter.
Yeah.
To be a regular kid.
And I think... we can look at that, Ron. Look at Jimmy Carter. What kind of a parent was he to their kid, who was about the same age as Barron is? Would you and I agree that Carter and Rosalynn were certainly better parents than the current occupants to their child?
Yes. By the way, talk about that. Jimmy Carter will reach 93 on October 1st, which is next Sunday. So maybe if I'm on the show next week, we could talk about the fact that he'll be the fourth president to have reached fourth in a row, that is 93, as Reagan, Ford, and H.W. Bush all, of course, are 93. And in fact, George H.W. will break the age record of Gerald Ford, who lived 6 weeks longer than Ronald Reagan, on November 25th, right after Thanksgiving. So we have a couple of moments to celebrate. October 1st, Carter's 93, and on November 25th, H.W. Bush is longer lived than Gerald Ford or Ronald Reagan.
Ron, if I were to get Baron Trump on the phone, that would be quite an accomplishment. But if I were to ask him candidly, what kind of a dad is Donald? What do you think he would say?
He's very shy, though. I'm not sure he would be of the age yet or the interest in doing that kind of thing. But I'd be curious someday to find out what he thinks, yes. But he doesn't seem like a happy camper very much in public. And usually the children put on a good front. They smile. He doesn't smile much, if you notice, whenever we've seen him.
Yeah, Scott said the similar thing about the Queen of England. She never really smiles, even though occasionally you can get a grin out of her. But yeah, Baron does seem kind of, I guess, stoic. Never really much of an expression. I guess a little mysterious. kind of hard to place him. But I think even if Donald were a great father, I mean, like the Carters, for example, it is a very hard job being the son of a sitting president, a school age son. I don't know how they do it, and I certainly would admire him for that. It's not an easy role.
No, but I think the two Obama daughters handled it quite well, considering when you look back, they really did.
So it's something you have to pretty much play by ear when you're in that role. And maybe looking back 20 or 30 years, Barron will think, well, I did the best I could, and maybe he'll be speaking with another son or young son or daughter of a president about, don't criticize the kid for wearing a T-shirt or just being a regular kid. We didn't elect Barron as president. We elected his father. And maybe that's
right. You're correct.
For thought. About 90 seconds left to the show. I want to thank Dr. Ronald Fineman on the phone with me live from southeastern Florida for being my guest and for this being his 18th appearance. How about that for coolness? Really appreciate it. Ron, you'll be back with us, I'm sure, sometime in the near future. We always enjoy your dulcet tones and your insight and enjoy talking and sometimes debating about the topics of the day.
Yeah, thank you so much, Adam, for inviting me. I always enjoy it.
You have a class coming up this Friday, which you're
yes.
teaching, and wish you good luck in the class. Hopefully your students will be intriguing and will enjoy having their brains stimulated by the insight that you provide.
I hope so. Certainly, if I don't tell them about the show, but I'm sure they would enjoy listening to you because you're really a great host.
Well, I certainly try my best, and I certainly aim to please, and you're... Your compliments are always welcome. Have a great day there, Ron. We will talk to you soon here at the Talking Place.
Thank you so much.
WWGH 107.1 on your FM dial, broadcasting at 5590 Center Street in Marion. And, of course, you can listen online anywhere in the world by the power and magic of the Internet at WWGH1071.com. The lovely Linda Sims is on next following the 11 o'clock features, and then I am back as guest host of Now Without Scott Spears. Adam at WWGH1071.com.
Your